If you think you've done something really wrong, you might feel emotions like shame or guilt. So what do you do then? Do you go and tell someone? Would that make you feel better? In Western European culture, the idea that you should tell someone about what you did is closely connected to the idea of confession in Christianity. In this lecture for the East and West Learning Connections, I talk about the Confessions by St. Augustine. This book was written over 1,000 years ago, but it had a lot of influence on the idea of confessing in Europe. East and West Learning Connections lectures and meetings help newcomers connect to Canadian culture in Canada, and I want to say thank you to them for organizing this lecture. Confession is a really influential idea in Western culture, even though most people don't go to church and don't confess in this way anymore. In Christian confession, a person goes to church to tell the priest about what he or she has done, and the priest keeps it a secret. The idea is that God overhears the confession, forgives the person, and then God technically takes on that sin, so the person doesn't have to live with it alone. God and the priest know about it now. The book The Confessions of St. Augustine is closely connected to this idea. Augustine converted to Christianity at 32, and in his book, The Confessions, he confesses all of the sins that he engaged in when he was younger. Some of Augustine's sins are his beliefs in Manichaeanism, but a lot of his sins are sins of the body. So essentially, the book retells many of the terrible things that Augustine did. He stole things, he had lots of sex, and he lied to people. In fact, he taught people how to lie because he taught public speaking. And in the Confessions, he tells his story to the reader so that he can clear his conscience. So his book takes the form of a confession. St. Augustine of Hippo died in 430 AD, but he was a really influential figure in Christianity. He was born in North Africa, in Carthage, and he converted to Christianity in 386 AD. He was actually raised Christian by his mother, but he became a Manichae. Manichaeanism saw Jesus as a prophet, but not the Son of God. It's an interesting religion. Buddha, Zoroaster, and Jesus are all part of it. One of the main differences to Christianity is that Manichaeanism does not think God is totally powerful. Instead, evil is a power in the world. Therefore, the world is dual, split between two powers. God did not create the world and is always at war with the devil. But we should probably begin with the idea of confession. In Christianity, the idea and the practice of confession seems to have become a thing in the second century, about 1800 years ago. This is before St. Augustine wrote the Confessions. Originally, the practice of confession was public, but later it became private. Now, these days, the way confession works in Christian religion is, for Catholics anyway, a person has to go to church and meet privately with the priest to tell the priest what he's done wrong, and then the priest will keep the secret. That's been a tradition for about 1,500 years. Because the priest keeps it secret, the person can tell the priest absolutely anything without fear of being ashamed or embarrassed. The priest will not necessarily tell the person that they have done wrong, but the priest will tell the person what to do in order to make it right with God. The idea is that when you confess to the priest, God will hear as well, because the priest is an intermediary between God and the person. It's not the priest who is forgiving sins. It's God who is thought of as forgiving sins. So when the person has confessed the sin, the priest will give some suggestion as to what the person can do to make it up to God. Sometimes there is some penance that has to be done. Penance means punishment in some senses. In another sense, penance just means the thing that you have to do to pay for your sin. The influence of the concept of confession is huge in our culture. The fictional genre of biography is often thought to have come directly from confession. So when Augustine writes his Confessions, it's often viewed as the first kind of biography. Now, autobiography is when you tell the story of your own life, and that's what Augustine is doing. Today, autobiography is a really popular type of writing. So if you want to understand autobiography, it's often expected that you would read Augustine's Confessions to begin with. And so if we do look at Augustine's Confessions, we see some distinctive features. First of all, Augustine views his life as a struggle between good and evil. This is a bit like the Manichaean idea, but it's different because in the end, and at the start too, God always wins. According to Augustine, the purpose of writing the Confessions is to, quote, warn or inspire the reader through the example of the author's life. If you want a broad introduction to biography, I would recommend you read the book Your Life as Story by Tristine Rainier. The other really important influence of the Confessions is not just on biography, of course, but on the really common practice of writing a journal. If you've ever taken an English course, the practice of writing a journal is often integrated into learning English. It's expected the student will learn to write by writing about himself or herself. Journaling is one of the techniques that is used to teach students to write. And if you think about the practice of writing a letter, there are some similarities there too, because in a letter, you tell your friend or relative what you've done in your life. And there's another similarity in that letters are quite private, and so often letters contain something exciting or risky. The practice of writing letters has been around for a very long time as well. It definitely predates the Confessions. If you think about the Christian Bible, there are many letters written in that book. In fact, Augustine said he was inspired by the story of St. Paul. And Paul, whose original name was Saul, was traveling on the road to Damascus and famously was converted. And he wrote his story to inspire others to convert as well. And Augustine sees himself as writing in that same model as St. Paul. St. Paul, in fact, was really one of the most influential New Testament writers in the Christian Bible. And in one of the lectures a few months ago, we discussed the book of John. But Paul himself wrote many lectures, including the letters to the Corinthians, which I've talked about previously in my lectures as well. So here we're seeing that there are a couple of key things about the Confessions. Number one, they're supposed to be a model to other people of how to live their life or how not to live their life. And number two, they contain private things that are somewhat exciting and risky, X-rated materials. But there are some gender differences. One thing that Tristine Rainier points out is that women did not tend to write these kinds of biographies. Men did, but instead women tended to write autobiographies that were about spiritual fulfillment or the advantages of being a good housewife. In other words, women did not write very sexy books if they wrote memoir. That did change in the 19th century. Publishing became a way to make money, and so women who were poor did in fact write memoirs about their sex lives in order to make money. And of course, it's not just women that do that today. We see this kind of practice in our own lives when we look at all the books published by film stars or other famous people, writing about all the terrible things that they did in their own lives with drugs or sex or rock and roll. And of course, movies and stories take this kind of approach too, telling us that they will let us into the secrets of their characters' lives. It's probably also important to mention Jean-Jacques Rousseau and his Confessions. This is in French and from the 18th century. It's a very interesting read. But Augustine's Confessions remains a really important book to read if you want to understand what it means to do writing about your own life. Sometimes this kind of writing is called life writing. And the novel is, of course, a really important writing form in our culture. But biography and life writing is quite similar to the novel sometimes. So it's important to think about the Confessions as a major influence on the novel, too. So to sum up again, Augustine believes he's trying to present to us a warning and a model, how to be in life and how not to be. Also, the Confessions contains private things that are sexy and bad, sinful and exciting. The third point to make is that since Augustine views his life as a struggle between good and evil, this is in some way connected to how we view a character in a novel. In a novel, we have a hero character who is struggling to change, to overcome something, to win some conflict. The idea of conflict is quite central to the idea of what it means to have a good story. In some definitions of story, or the novel, or a movie, you only have a good story if you have an exciting conflict. The hero has to encounter an obstacle, has to overcome it, must be transformed, must transcend things, and become someone new and better. The character must confront the lie or the false beliefs they had and embrace the truth that they need. The truth will make them a better person. The truth will set them free. Well, that's essentially what Augustine thinks is happening to him. Augustine rejects his sinful ways and converts to Christianity. His belief in God saves him and changes his view on life. He confronts all the old sinful lies he believed in and changes his lifestyle for the better. So far, I've talked about the form of the book and how that's an influence on literature. But let's talk about Augustine himself. In book four, one of the interesting things we learn about Augustine is that he was actually a teacher of public speaking. What he means is that he was a teacher of rhetoric. And in fact, I lectured on rhetoric a couple of months ago for East and West Learning Connections. Rhetoric is the art of persuasion. And as I pointed out in my lecture on rhetoric, in classical times, rhetoric had a bad reputation. Nowadays, we think of rhetoric as something beautiful and wonderful that you learn in English class so that you can learn to write very nice letters and essays and persuade your reader better. And it's hard to think of a reason why we would not want to persuade someone. Of course, persuasion is a good thing. But in Greek times and Roman times, persuasion was very much mistrusted because it was viewed as a way to warp people's minds and persuade them to do bad things. And if you can imagine, if you live in a world where you think that everyone is fundamentally good and wants to do good things, why would you want to persuade them otherwise? You only need to persuade them if you are persuading them to do bad things. And so Augustine comments on this. At the beginning of the book, book four, he says he taught the tricks of pleading. He never tried to get the innocent condemned, but he did try to, quote, save the lives of the guilty, close quote. When he says he never tried to get the innocent condemned, this is a kind of reference to the sort of persuasion that Socrates really hated. Aristotle writes his treatise on rhetoric in order to convince people that rhetoric is not bad, because many people thought that rhetoric was what resulted in the death of Socrates. Augustine also points out that he lived with a woman he was not married to, and he seems quite guilty about this and ashamed of it. He says, and I quote, "She was the only one, and I was faithful to her." But he does not view this as virtuous behavior. And in fact, throughout the Confessions, this is a theme, that Augustine has engaged in sexual impropriety. He has had sex with women whom he was not married to. In fact, at the beginning of the book, he says, "Bodily desire like a morass and adolescent sex welling up within me exuded mists but clouded over and obscured my heart, so that I could not distinguish the clear light of true love from the mark of lust. Love and lust together seethed within me." And then at the beginning of book three, he says, "I married the stream of friendship with the filth of lewdness and clouded its clear waters with hell's black river of lust." Later on, Augustine will decide that all sex and human love is really problematic. He rejects even sex within marriage. And that is consistent with a lot of Catholic teaching, the idea that people should marry only if they cannot bear to be celibate. Meanwhile, though, you can see that Augustine's imagery is quite colorful, and he is quite passionate about describing his previous sin. He describes it in a way that is quite appealing. In fact, many people have thought that Confessions is a kind of pornography. That is, he presents his sin in a way that almost seems pleasurable, or like he wants to take pleasure in it. And it is pleasurable for the reader, even though Augustine may not have felt pleasure describing these things. Certainly, he feels very passionate about the need to talk about the sexual things that he did. So although Augustine says in his book that he plans to confess my sins to you for your honor and glory, God, to offer you a sacrifice of joy, although he says that, secretly we think perhaps he might enjoy talking about his prior sins. Perhaps he gets a perverse pleasure out of thinking about all of the things he did wrong. Certainly, some readers will, and perhaps that is why the book is so popular now. Knowing that what we know about how popular memoir is today, especially the kind of memoir that tells people candid secrets that are somewhat dirty, since we know that now, we can sort of see the appeal of confession in a medieval society. In that society, this kind of activity is illegal, and acting out those kinds of scenes or talking about them could be punishable very severely. Talking about all that activity would be pornographic and condemned as well. But if you talk about it in a way that says, "I did this terrible thing, I confess, now I'm redeemed, God has saved me," then the church will be satisfied. It will be okay. No one will go to court for pornography crimes. So what I'm trying to get across to you is that many people who study books like the Confessions think that the motivations for reading this kind of religious, sexy book, the motivations for reading it were not 100% religious. If you want to go back and read some of the more colorful parts of the Confessions, read the first three books. Keep in mind that there was a lot of discussion of how sad Augustine feels about all the sins he committed, Even though he is pledging his inspiration by St. Paul and his faithfulness to God, some of it makes for really good reading, even if you have absolutely no interest in being converted. With that in mind, let's look at some of the imagery St. Augustine uses. In Book 4, in Section 2, Augustine says, and I quote, "The soul which pines for such fantasies breaks its truth with you." He adds, "Does it not trust in false hopes and play shepherd to the wind?" That's an interesting idea, playing shepherd to the wind. This is imagery that a farmer could understand. To shepherd means to care for and direct and guide. Sheep have bodies, they're animals. But the wind, obviously, that's very difficult to direct and guide. You cannot make the wind behave properly. The wind is wild. Sheep are boring and relatively stupid, and even then they are hard to direct. The wind is totally impossible to direct. So Augustine is saying that if the soul goes after things like sex and money, it is chasing something impossible, trying to do something impossible. Not only impossible, it's trying to do something tragic and sad. So there's a lot of emotion in how Augustine discusses the problems faced by the soul. Next, Augustine says, "We find pasture for devils. We give them food for laughter and fill their cup of pleasure, if the soul goes after bad things like sex and riches and pleasure and money." When Augustine describes the devils laughing and eating and filling their cup of pleasure, this sounds quite nice, doesn't it? It sounds kind of enjoyable. And so Augustine is giving us this enjoyment while at the same time critiquing it. One of the other interesting things about Augustine's writing is how much sadness he seems to feel. He feels love very strongly for women, for his friends, for beautiful things. This love seems to drive his passion for God as well. So at some point, he switches over and directs his love from people toward God. Interestingly, it's Augustine's mother that provides a model of purity for him. In Book 6, he describes how his mother gives food to the poor and does exactly what the bishop wants her to do, even though it goes against her habits and desires. Another important aspect of Augustine's writing is how he uses metaphor, analogy, and allegory. For example, when he discusses happiness in Book 6, he compares the drunkenness of a beggar to the poverty of mind suffered by someone who does not love God. The beggar can sleep off being drunk, but Augustine, who is unhappy because he hasn't found God, is unhappy every night and every morning, so he is no better than the drunk beggar. Even the beggar is happier than him, Augustine says. He was happy and good because when he was drunk, he wished good day to all the passers-by. He was kind to everyone, and that's why he was happy. Augustine, by contrast, was seeking a swollen reputation by lying. And that's a rather clever way of saying that Augustine was poor in spirit. Augustine was worse than a beggar, in other words. In this passage, Augustine is going over what it means to be happy. And in fact, the Confessions is also a kind of meditation on Neoplatonic philosophy. It can be read along with Aristotle in terms of a philosophy of the good, because Augustine is continually asking himself, what is good in the world? What does it mean to be truly happy? And Augustine discusses the happiness of the beggar. He is saying, look, it matters why someone is happy. Being unhappy as a drunk is no better than being unhappy as a teacher who is teaching corrupt ideas. This view of happiness goes back to Augustine's view that you cannot be happy about just anything. True happiness means you are happy because you love God. This is a kind of Platonic philosophy, that a good life means the pursuit of the good, and the good is something we can define. So happiness is not just a feeling, it's actually an action, and it means going after something that you can see, explain, or touch. Now, of course, in Augustine's philosophy, technically, the external goal of happiness is internal because it's the love of God. Happiness is not an experience, therefore, it's a bit like a job with clearly defined outcomes. And this, of course, is very different from how we see happiness today. As Augustine says here, and he says, "I have no patience with anyone who would say to my soul, but it makes a difference what a person is happy about. That beggar was enjoying his intoxication. You longed to bask in glory. What kind of glory was that, Lord? No glory that was to be found in you. For just as his was no true joy, so was mine no true glory." In Book 9, we see Augustine's conversion beginning. And one trigger for this seems to be that he loses his voice while teaching. He seems to have burned out. We burn out our voices by talking too much, by teaching too much. And he says, and I quote, "It happened by coincidence that in that same summer, my lungs had begun to fail under the severe strain of teaching, making it difficult for me to draw back breath and giving proof of their unhealthy condition by pains in my chest. My tone was husky and I could not manage any sustained vocal effort." Also in Book 9, Augustine's mother Monica dies. Augustine praises his mother for helping to convert his father Patrick and for helping Augustine himself be converted to Christianity. Augustine finally stops teaching rhetoric. Although Augustine complains about his own dishonesty in teaching rhetoric, it's without a doubt that his skill with words helps make his book, The Confessions, appealing and beautiful. He uses metaphor well, and he surprises the reader at every turn. He's also very effective at appealing to the reader's emotions. He loves to talk about deep feelings. Here, I'll quote a passage where he's speaking about his religious conversion and about some of the emotions he feels related to his conversion. "There within, where I had grown angry with myself, there in the inner chamber, where I was pierced with sorrow, where I had offered sacrifice, slaying my old nature, and hoping in you, God, as I began to give my mind to the new life, there you, God, had begun to make me feel your sweetness and had given me joy in my heart." This emphasis on having deep feelings and expressing them is, I think, what I find most appealing about the Confessions. And it's what we like about memoir too, today, I think. When writers express their feelings clearly, we get a very clear idea of their voice, which in turn gives us an idea of their identity. Another interesting thing about Augustine is that words make him feel very strongly. He has a genuine pleasure in them. He finds them beautiful, and they make him very excited. And this is, of course, related to his former career as a teacher of words. He says about a Bible passage, "I read on and on, all afire. I had been a lethal nuisance, bitter and blind and baying against honey-sweet scriptures distilled from heaven's honey, scriptures made luminous by your light, God." In other words, all the passion Augustine once felt for the pleasures of the flesh, sex and money and things, this passion has been transformed into a religious passion. He still feels all the joy, but now it's a better joy, and it's a joy in the word of God, so the words that God gives us. Now, I started off the lecture by discussing some of the similarities between this book and modern types of books, like the novel, the autobiography and biography, and letters. And it's very clear that Augustine's Confessions and the practice of confession influences these kinds of books. So you may read a biography or a novel and come across some of these kinds of ideas. First of all, the life of a person is a struggle between good and evil, between truth and lies. The character must struggle to overcome the lie and to embrace the truth. The story will show the character going forwards and slipping backwards on his quest toward a better life. This idea has a very strong influence on movies, TV, theater, and all sorts of modern novels. Second, in these books, there's often a sense of telling secrets in a private way, telling stories that are somehow dirty or show someone acting in a corrupt way. Memoir is popular when it does just this. We're excited to read about how famous people have made mistakes, hurt people, broken the law, or been hurt themselves. Although Augustine's Confessions is a religious book, it's likely that the readers enjoyed things that they could not admit enjoying. Third, confession is a sort of a good act. It helps make the writer feel better. It helps the writer figure out what his or her priorities are and move on with his or her life. Hopefully, by talking about the mistakes the person made, the person will then feel able to go forward. This is not the same as therapy, of course, but it could be therapeutic, allowing the person to talk about something that happened in the past so that they can feel better about their lives now. So here are some questions for discussion for later on. Do you think therapy is like confession? Why or why not? What are some advantages of telling close friends about something serious or bad that you've done? Do you like to tell secrets? Do you like to hear them? What's the appeal here? And do you think that people read the Confessions in order to get some enjoyment out of reading about bad behavior? We live in a freer society than Augustine lived in, probably, and we're still very interested in reading tell-all memoirs. Why do you think people enjoy biographies of famous people? And finally, can you think of any movie or story characters who discover that they are living a lie and go on to discover their true identity? Or movies in which a hero changes in a sort of struggle between good and evil? All right, thanks very much for listening. And I want to thank the East and West Learning Connections again for organizing these lectures.